and here to talk a little bit about politics, maybe about making real change, becoming a leader. We have with us this morning former Democratic minority leader from Georgia and the first African-American to lead in the House of Representatives. And she's also a current candidate to become the first female black governor in America. Stacey Abrams joins us this morning. She's written the book called Minority Leader, How to Lead from the Outside and Make Real Change. Stacey, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So what made you want to share your insights into leadership?
I work with a lot of young people, a lot of women, people of color, and across the country, when I would talk about my trajectory, the two questions I got were, how did you do it, and how can I? And this book is really written as sort of a lean-in for the rest of us. There are a lot of leadership books out there, but if you don't come from privilege, if you don't have money, if you don't know anyone else who's done something, it's sometimes difficult to figure out how you can become a leader in your own right. And this book is designed to be a handbook to help you.
And at what point did you kind of look back at your trajectory, sort of in your path, and kind of, now that you've put it into text, sort of see how it kind of developed? Or, I mean, because you were living it at the time, right? I mean,
exactly. It's a very awkward endeavor to sit down and sort of try to trace your own path. But I've been very methodical my entire life. I actually talk about the spreadsheet that I created when a very mean boy broke my heart in college, and I decided to lay out my pathway to prove to him that he was wrong to say no to me. And that spreadsheet has really helped me organize the way I've approached leadership. But I think for any person, even if you don't have that in your past, there are some very key things that you can understand, like how to build mentorship relationships, the fact that most mentors are myths, the way you hack opportunity when you take advantage of not being in a position of real power, and how you can sort of winnow your way in and find ways to become a leader despite what the world tells you.
The book has the introduction, talks to you about when you're trying to apply or deciding to apply for a Rhodes Scholarship, and the fact that when you don't get it, you actually state and you realize that failure isn't fatal. Was that a key to kind of really understanding how to move forward from these sort of concerns and fears?
Absolutely. One of the challenges a lot of us face is that we don't try because we're afraid if we fail, everything is over. And for me, that moment was really emblematic of the fact that trying is really the point. Winning is great, and please don't get me wrong. I'm trying to win an election. I want to win. But I think too often we don't try because failure just seems so hard. And really, it's an opportunity to learn. But you have to know how to leverage failed opportunities to get to the next one.
How do we see, do we change ourselves or do we try to change others related to some of these isms, you know, ageism, racism, that sort of thing?
I think it's a both and. We have to acknowledge that these isms exist, and it's disingenuous and naive to think that they don't exist, and that all of us find some challenge with engaging with others. But what I talk about is you have to acknowledge they exist, and then you have to figure out how to work around them. Because if we're waiting for perfection from humanity, it's going to be a long wait. But for each of us, we have our own capacity to navigate these spaces. And that's not to suggest that it gets easier, but you develop a capacity to get around it. When I became the first woman to lead either party in the Georgia General Assembly, I couldn't look to any other woman to see what I should do because no one else had done it. And there was some sexism that I faced when I took that job. But part of my responsibility was to understand that sexism existed and then to figure out how I could use my strengths to navigate despite their concerns.
Stacey, are the principles in your book applicable to men, women, Democrat, Republican? Does it cross over?
Absolutely. The fundamental premise of my book is that if you feel like an outsider, and we all know when we're in a space and we're not quite like everyone else, the whole entire point is that this is a book for anyone who doesn't come from that space of having the money already or having the power already. If you are not that person, then you're in the minority, and your job is to then figure out how you get to that leadership space.
You've written other books before, romance novels.
Yes.
So, you know, your career, you have different things, and sort of this book kind of has a lot of flair to it, I think, in the way you've kind of structured things and told the stories. is it, do you just try different career? You are a tax attorney. Is there certain things where you just go after something, or do you sort of see linear, you know, connections between a lot of these different areas?
I believe in trying the things that interest me, and I've been very lucky and very blessed to have been successful in some of these areas. I think what works for me is that I enjoy storytelling. I enjoy writing. I like being a tax attorney, and I've found ways to make everything fit together. Chapter 8 of the book is called Work-Life Jenga for a reason, because so many of us try to make all the different parts of ourselves fit into balance, and that doesn't work. And instead, it's like a really, really long game of Jenga where you're just trying to make sure the whole blocks don't fall over. And I've been very lucky to have been able to keep most of my blocks working for a while.
We're talking today with Stacey Abrams. The book is Minority Leader, How to Lead from the Outside and Make Real Change. When you look at what you've done so far, where do you think you've seen that you've helped make change?
I think the work that I've done in the state of Georgia as not only the leader of the Democratic Party in the House, but working in cooperation with Republicans to make advances on education, on transportation, one of my biggest issues is grandparents and others raising children who are not their own. And my ability to work with people who don't necessarily share my background, but we all share a common belief that people's lives should be better and that we have a role to play. And I think that is the most significant change I've been able to make. But hopefully after May 22nd, I'll be on the road to making another change as the next governor of Georgia.
Where do you see the younger generation taking this sort of mantle of, you know, making change from the outside? What, in your discussions with them, in talks with them, what do you see from them and how they've been raised through their own prism of things?
I think they're often given aphorisms and rhetoric about what they should do, but there isn't always a concrete guide. And one of the things I try to do in this book is actually give you exercises. Here's what you should do. And I think we've seen it through the Parkland teenagers. Across the country, we've seen different young people rise up to reorganize their world. And sometimes it's in commerce, sometimes it's in business. But the major piece is understanding that even age is not an excuse for not being in power, that you simply have to figure out where do you fit and what drives you. And I think that's the piece that I really want people to get to. Figure out what you want, and don't let age be an impediment to achieving what you desire.
How important is family in what you've been able to do?
Family is essential. I'm the second of six children. I have two extraordinary parents, and I watch them have different careers. My mom was a librarian. My dad was a shipyard worker. And when I was 15, they decided to go back to school to become United Methodist ministers. That's what moved us from Mississippi, which is where I grew up, to Georgia, where they went to Emory University. And when you watch your parents work full-time, go to school full-time, and raise six children, you have no excuse for saying that you can't get things done. But I also had parents who loved me, loved my brothers and sisters, and were committed to us in ways that, you know, still continue to drive me forward.
Do you see yourself similar to your siblings, or do you have... How are you fitting in this into the family structure? Are you like the odd one? They're looking at you thinking, how did she do all that? Or are they all kind of in their own way, kind of following in the similar footsteps?
I have extraordinary brothers and sisters. They run from, I have an anthropologist sister, a sister who's an evolutionary biologist, one who's a judge, a brother who's a social worker. And we even have a brother who has struggled with drug addiction but is putting his life back together. He has suffered from mental illness and incarceration, but even he understands that in our family, stumbling is not fatal. You can make mistakes, and what I see in each of them are pieces of what I want to be one day. Being smart and strong and capable, but also realizing we don't have to be alike to be together.
You found your way to try to make change through politics. How do you see other people being able to do that if they don't want to get into that arena?
Absolutely. In the book, I talk about, you know, if you are working in a mid-level job and you want to do something different, you can use this book to figure out how do you transition to another job. If you want your PTA to run better and you're tired of the same old leadership, it's not about going into politics writ large, but it's about helping your kids. If your neighborhood association isn't taking up the issues that matter to you, here's how you take the lead. And even in your family, if you find yourself sometimes hedging your bets and not doing things you want, here's a method of thinking about what do you want, why do you want it, and how do you get there? Because leadership isn't about politics. Leadership is about making the space you're in a space you want to continue to be in.
Going back to that spreadsheet about that boyfriend, just for a moment here, I mean, did putting something like down help to heal you? Did it kind of reaffirm that, hey, I'm not who he thinks I am? And it gave you, just by actually seeing it in print, kind of reinforced what you thought about yourself and how things would move forward?
It did. It was cathartic. It took a long time because I was using Lotus 1-2-3. but it was also, it provided me a different lens on myself. I realized I wasn't that good at dating, and he had some valid points, not as many as he thought he did, but it also helped me to start thinking differently about relationships, about the responsibility I had to be my whole self in those spaces. And that's hard sometimes. Sometimes you go into relationships and you try to be who the other person wants you to be, and you know, when you're 18 years old, sort of trying to figure out who exactly you are is hard. It took some time for all the lessons to settle in, but I'm no longer bitter.
That's good. We appreciate it. Well, the book is called Minority Leader, How to Lead from the Outside and Make Real Change. Our guest this morning, Stacey Abrams. Thanks very much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Bye-bye.
Take care.